This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you along during Heart Month. February is Heart Month, and it's a time to raise awareness of the issues surrounding cardiac health. We're talking today with Evangelical Community Hospital's Dr. Saqib Siddiqui. He's a cardiologist at the Heart and Vascular Center, also the medical director of cardiac rehabilitation. And we have some information for you today about your heart. Let me ask you first just a general question about heart disease, the prevalence of it. How many people in this country are dealing with some form of heart issues?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Now, this number keeps changing. But overall, if you look at the last time this was looked at, around 2018, about 30 million Americans were diagnosed with some aspect of heart disease. So 30.3 million people, over 600,000 people every year die of heart disease in America.
How does that compare to other countries? I always look at the American diet as having to have an impact, but does it, or is that just my perception of it?
No, there is definitely some credence to that. If you look at within the United States, it tends to be a little bit higher than the rest of the world, and that may be for a couple of different reasons. We're really good at looking at statistics. We have a good database. If you start looking at third world countries, we don't have the same database. We don't have the same amount of statistics that we can go on. So yes, it seems that that may be a higher prevalence here, but we don't know exactly. There are some areas of heart disease that we are improving on. For example, if you look at smoking, if you look at cigarette smokes, the United States has actually gone down significantly compared to Eastern cultures, where they're now the smoking and cigarette smoking is going up, and then their heart disease prevalence is going up. And in fact, the Western diet, the saturated diet, the higher fats, the fast food, McDonald's, Burger, this is becoming a big, it's growing. This market is growing actually much faster in the developing nations than it is here in the United States. And so you're seeing that cardiovascular disease that was higher prevalent in the United States actually equalizing across the world because of this.
How much does genetics play a part in this?
There's a way to look at it. One of the best ways to look at it for me would be we look at primary family members, and that would mean mom, dad, brother, and sister. We don't really go into extensive disease of uncles and aunts. I mean, that could play a potential role, but really we're looking at primary family members, mom, dads, brothers, sisters, and we're really talking about premature coronary history, and that generally means below the age of 60, okay, both for men and women. If you have coronary disease, meaning you had a heart attack or a stroke or heart failure before the age of 60, that's called premature coronary disease. What that means is that there may be a genetic link there. If there was a mom or dad or grandpa or grandma who had a heart attack or heart failure at the age of 80 or 90, that's less likely that there's going to be a genetic link, because at that point there is some aging of the heart and the disease process that is inevitable. But before the age of 60, it can play a major role within cardiovascular disease as it pertains to family history.
And, of course, every time we go to the doctor for an appointment, we're having those standard things, blood pressure, cholesterol, and so forth, keeping tabs on them. So does that often turn something up early if the person is a regular visitor to their doctor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can. And this is why it's so important to see a doctor regularly, you know, whether it's a family doctor or if you're a consultant. And the main reason is because, you know, things change in your life. And if you're seeing a family doctor on a regular basis, and they can pick up on, your blood pressures have been steadily rising, or your cholesterol levels that we get once a year, they're looking like they're getting a little bit worse. There's a way to quickly catch something and say, we need to work on this. We need to fix it. It could be anything from dietary changes. It could be anything from life modifications, whether it's stress, whether it's exercise, managing one of those things. and really keep a close eye on it, because it is, blood pressure and cholesterol, as you know, don't have a lot of symptoms, right? I mean, most people don't feel a very high blood pressure. Well, they may feel blood pressures are in the 200s and they're getting dangerously high, but overall, that blood pressure that's abnormal, you don't really feel the 160s, 150s, 170s, you may not feel those. And the same thing with cholesterol numbers. As the cholesterol numbers go up, you may not necessarily feel any problems until a bad problem happens, like a stroke or a heart attack. So it becomes very important to keep an eye on those things that don't affect you, because suddenly they may affect you, and they may affect you in a bad way.
At what point is intervention necessary? I mean, do I need to be taken to the ER with a heart attack, or is there something that's going to indicate to you that maybe I should, perhaps have a cardiac cath or something of that nature? What point is that done?
Let me start off with reducing your risk at all of having heart disease, right? I mean, when you see a family doctor, or you're looking at a cardiologist, for whatever reason you're seeing them, we have a good way to sort of estimate your risk for heart disease or heart problems, okay? And we base that on your race, your cholesterol, your blood pressure, whether you're diabetic, if you're a smoker, if you're on blood pressure medications, and we can come up with about a 10-year risk for your risk for cardiovascular disease. And we can also come up with, if you're on the right medications, if your blood pressure is controlled, if your cholesterol is controlled, if you're not smoking, we can tell you what your risk, how much you can reduce that risk with. Now, let's say we do all these things, and despite it all, you're still having, now you start getting pain or pressure, or chest pain, or your blood pressure is going up high. We need to treat it with medicine. So we try to treat this, we treat the blood pressure, we treat the cholesterol. Now, despite this, or it's not working, or maybe we don't want to try it, or it's too late, if you start having chest pain or pressure or palpitations in your heart, meaning you go out to, you're doing your general things that you're able to do, and now you're not able to do as much because you're short of breath more, or you're getting fluttering in your chest, or you used to be able to go up and down stairs, but now you feel like you get some mild tightness and it goes away, but it's not normal. That's when you need to raise some flags and say, okay, this is not who I am. This is not what it used to be. I need to go get checked out. Now, if you ever get pain and pressure in your chest that is not going away, if you're getting tightness in females or diabetics, you get stomach reflux problems that you've never had before, or you're getting neck or jaw pain that you've never had before, you're getting shoulder pain, back pain that's just absolutely abnormal for you, you need to think, hey, is this potentially heart disease? Is there a blockage? Am I having a heart attack? And if at that point you are, you know what? You need to go to the emergency room. You need to raise flags and say, I need to go to the emergency room. I need to call my cardiologist. I need to call my family doctor. I need to get in touch. Something emergently needs to happen here. Similar to strokes and heart attacks, time is of the essence here. You only have one heart, and the longer you wait, and if there gets to be damage to the heart, the longer you wait, the less likely there's going to be good recovery. So you need to move with some urgency when you feel like there's something wrong with your heart.
On the other side of that, then, once there has been an event and perhaps surgery or some type of surgical intervention, what do people need to expect with rehabilitation, and how far can it take them?
Yeah, so I can give you an example of, this is an example that I can give you of multiple patients who have a heart attack, who have those symptoms that I just talked about. They were doing something, they were shoveling snow, they started getting chest pain that didn't stop. They rushed to the emergency room, they called the ambulance brought them in. We quickly recognized that they were having a heart attack. They were in our cath lab within 15, 20, 30 minutes. They got stents in and everything was fine. And so we do an echocardiogram that shows how he had a little bit of damage to the heart. We're going to put you on these medications. You're going to take them every day. We're going to put you in a cardiac rehabilitation program. And this program improves your cardiovascular health by doing trained exercises. We go over education, counseling. Over a period of 1, 2, 3, 4 months, everything can recover to normal, to a point where you were prior to your heart attack. It's amazing how far cardiovascular medicine and medicine in general has come, where we can take somebody who's having a heart attack, and in 3 to 6 months, if you look at a fingerprint of whether they ever had a heart attack, you may never be able to tell that they actually had a heart attack. But the process is, it's going to be a big process. It's a process that requires compliance to medical therapy. It requires a compliance to going to rehab. It takes a compliance to say, I'm going to quit smoking, compliance to say, I'm going to treat my blood pressure and my cholesterol, and I'm going to change some things about my diet. And if you can do all of those things, it's amazing how far you can go back to a point where you feel like nothing actually ever happened to you.
How fast has that advanced, that ability to do such good intervention and good rehab?
So if you think about what back in the 1986, this was not long time ago. I was born in 1985. So 1986 was the first stent that was ever placed, okay? Prior to that, we had balloon angioplasties and things that just weren't that good. But the first stent was placed in 1986. So if you go from 1986, 36 years is where we're at. Within 36 years, we've gone from, we really don't know what to do for heart attacks besides here's some aspirin, maybe some balloon angioplasty, which was not great. And just waited to see what happened. That's all we were able to do. And so a lot of those patients ended up ending up with high grades of congestive heart failure and comorbidities that came from bad heart attacks. As now we're in, again, less than 15, 20, 30 years later, we've gotten to a point where, again, you come in, you get a stent, and if you come in early enough and quickly enough and are able to go through the process of the medical therapy that has advanced unbelievably with our antiplatelet medications like Plavix and aspirin, it's gotten so good that, like I said, if you look at some of these patients who have had a heart attack and you try to fingerprint whether they ever had a heart attack, you may not even be able to tell.
Big jumps in the last 3 decades, and that's yeah. Impressive. Yeah. Anything else that you want to add that, things that people really should keep in mind if they potentially could have an issue?
Yeah. So I like to, a couple of different things. I mean, I think there's a education part of, when you see your doctor, there should be a level of education that you're expecting, and you should go in there with some expectations of trying to understand the disease process, what's happening to you, and in a manner that you understand it. And if you don't understand exactly what's happening or what's going on with you, you should be able to feel comfortable to say, I'm going to stop the person, the doctor, the provider, and say, can you explain that to me in a way that I understand? Because if you can't understand it, there's no way you're going to be able to take care of it. So it's really, really important. In a similar way, if I go and get something fixed in my car, I need to understand, hey, I got to come back every 3,000 miles to get my oil changed. And why is it important for me to get my oil changed? Is because the engine relies on it. And if not, the engine may burn out. So that education is important to me. And I think it should be almost something that you're going in there trying to understand why you're going to be on this medication, how it's going to improve it. And having that type of relationship with both your family doctor or your specialist, like a cardiologist, is very, very, very important.
Thanks for being with us on the program today. You've been listening to Evangelicals. Dr. Saqib Siddiqui, a cardiologist and medical director of the Cardiac Rehabilitation Unit at Evangelical Hospital in Lewisburg. Thanks for being with us on the program, Doctor. And we want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.